Welcome to The Squid of Despair, unscripted musings on business life, leadership, creativity, transformation, and all the myriad of other work-life events that get in the way of a good night's sleep. Hosted by David Ayling Smith and Peter Taylor.
Happy New Year, Peter.
Yes, Happy New Year. Wow. Yeah. It's another year over, another year in the life of the Squid of Despair.
But it keeps going, doesn't it? I mean, we've had enough positive feedback to persuade us that you and me talking nonsense for half an hour has got an audience.
Are they real people or are they just voices in our head?
Well, that's a great question. No, I've seen the stats that you know, people are logging on and listening in, so that's good.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we have a cunning plan, so it's all good.
And it's my turn, isn't it, to kick off the first Squid of 2024.
Well, yeah, I mean, the listeners should understand that the dynamics have shifted here. And you know, after you and I had our pre-holiday season get-together, I gifted you the topics for this year, really, because, it's going to, and now every episode of The Squid of Despair from now on for the foreseeable future is going to be a surprise to me.
Well, was that because my choices are always better than yours, or is it because I always do my homework? Or is it because you just can't be bothered anymore?
It's actually none of those reasons. And so stop being me. I thought, the New Year's resolution I suggested to you yet again was be nice to me in 2024, but clearly that isn't working. Maybe 25.
No, I appreciate the opportunity to steer Squid into the areas that I'd like to explore. And thank you for facilitating that, Peter.
That's a horrible image I've just painted in my mind, but go on, carry on.
All right, so do you want to know?
Yeah, so Daz, please tell me, what is the very first Squid of Despair for 2024?
So I want to talk today about balance, Peter.
Okay.
And I suppose the subtext is, you know, is balance a superpower or is it an excuse for inaction? And there's lots of angles to this and we can take it any way we want to. But I suppose where I was starting this was, you know, I think in leadership, as we reflect on sort of leadership styles over the many years we've been working together, Peter, it's shifted really, hasn't it, from a more command and control sort of centered approach to a more agile and collaborative approach. And so one might argue it's become perhaps a more balanced practice than historically it was. And then, you know, perhaps broadening that definition of balance. If you think about different personality types, there's an argument, I think, that balance is good. So, for example, if you take a perfectionist where the emphasis is on speed, perhaps getting it done quickly, that's not true, is it? A perfectionist, the emphasis is on delivering it perfectly, isn't it? Whereas a pragmatist perhaps is about delivering it quickly. And so, you know, you've got personality traits that tend towards an extreme and everyone's on the spectrum, but balance is seen to be good in that context. Take a sort of an analytical type where, you know, decisions are made based on data, and an intuitive type where decisions are made on gut. You know, at the extremes, there are challenges with that, but balance, perhaps a good thing there. You know, look at tactics. If, you know, a tactician, someone will generate plans for the short term, but perhaps a visionary generates a long-term vision, but actually they don't work unless they're in balance, do they? So that's my premise, Peter. Balance.
Okay. All right. That was a wonderful monologue. thank you for the time to start thinking about it. Well, yeah. I'm going to bring this back to us. I feel that we have a degree of balance in the way we work. I'm the wild, funny, maverick one, and you're the sensible one.
Okay.
All double acts have that kind of balance, don't they?
They do. And so is that about, so are we talking about
your tone there? Wasn't one that you took that as a compliment. Sorry.
Well, no, but is that to do with teams and the, you know, the benefit of diversity and having different skills combined? I think, okay, that's a good place to go. I was thinking more within an individual.
Okay. Right. Okay.
Balance is something that I think has become more in vogue actually. Whereas I don't know, specialism and absolute focus is seen to be perhaps less advantageous these days. Is that true?
Well,
I mean,
yeah, so yes, I think, if I look at what I would say are successful leaders at the moment, they are of a more balanced nature. I mean, it's not long, as you say, to go back in time and, we could have drawn the typical kind of sales leader, the services leader, the marketing leader. They would be of a specific type to that kind of historical view of the role. Yeah, and we're not going to name names, but now, and there's still an element to that, but now there is more balance between leadership is leadership, it seems, rather than, I am a what X leader or a Y leader or whatever.
Well, but there are different leadership types, of course,
Oh, yes.
and certain scenarios require the sort of more direct leadership. We've talked before about, if you're on a battleground, you're not actually looking for consensus, are you? You're looking for, very,
No,
very immediate,
no, no.
a very results-oriented approach. Whereas, the business world today, I think, is looking towards more relationship-driven leadership styles, I think. And of course, all team members are different and need different things from their leaders. But this is where this idea that actually balance, I think, is a good thing. But if you generalize a bit, there's that phrase, isn't there? Moderation in all things. Have you heard that phrase, Peter?
Yes, Daz, I have heard that phrase, and it wasn't directed at me.
Well, I did research this. Apparently, that goes back to the ancient Greeks,
Okay.
where it was felt to be, a phrase that was in common parlance. But of course, actually, I don't agree with that phrase, because you can't have moderation. I mean, moderation in all things is not good. I mean, you can't have moderation in murder, can you? You can't have moderation in kindness.
No, no.
So I'm not actually sure that's helpful, really, even though it is.
I'm on the edge of concern now because you've talked about war, battlefields, and moderation in murder. Well, it sounds like a title of an Agatha Christie book.
But balance, work-life balance is seen as a good thing, isn't it? Where you set boundaries and you manage your time and engage in activities that bring you joy alongside your work. That balance in a work situation is seen as a good thing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, it seems to be something that was certainly accelerated through the whole pandemic experience that they took you look at certain articles and listen to certain things, and it feels like that accelerated the move already, where people were wanting more balance in their entirety of their life, and organizations are dealing with that now. So, I was going to go on to a question of, well, is the balanced leader or balanced manager a result of a mindset of the individual or a persuasion by the majority that this is what's required?
Oh, that's a good question.
Well, there's a lot of power in a good question, apparently, someone once told me.
Yeah, Squid 3. It's worth looking
I can't believe you know what episode it is.
that one. I think people bring their natural talents to a leadership role, don't they? And so they have tendencies. But then I think probably where I'm taking this, I think, is that leaders have to flex their leadership styles according to the situation and according to their team. So, some groups function better with a more directed approach, and some groups function better with a more collaborative approach. And I think, for me, one facet of good leadership is being sensitive to those nuances and actually being able to adapt one's approach according to the requirements. I think we all have tendencies. I mean, that's particularly true of you, of course, but we all have tendencies that where we prefer to spend our time. But I think the good leaders can generate themselves into these other places. I mean, would it be fair to say that sort of leadership broadly falls into two camps? You've got sort of results-oriented leadership, and then perhaps more relationship-oriented leadership, where one is perhaps more, to use that old vernacular, more command and control oriented, and one is more to do with delegation, collaboration, using the diversity of the team to achieve the results over a longer time period.
Well, I'd sort of go along with that, as long, you know, if it's described as a, you know, almost a spectrum which can allow the leader to move up and down that spectrum. I think it's the parameters that you can move towards. I mean, yeah, there are some people that are going to be far more results orientated by nature, and it's hard work to go down to the relationship level, and the others are perhaps more extreme on the relationship and harder to go up into the kind of directive, this is what you should do type of world.
Yes, and but I think, you know, for those of us that, you know, work in teams, it's very helpful to understand, I think, within your team and for yourself what you prefer, because then, you know, you can help people be effective, can't you, by manifesting in the way that makes them, you know, happiest or most productive, you know, within the realms of getting stuff done, of course.
Well, yeah, I think that's very interesting, because we're going to, you know, I'm going to head off in this direction, because I guess I was having a conversation with someone today over lunch, which was all around. And it is to do with balance, but it was, you know, we were talking about fun. We're talking about fun in building teams and the value of fun and happy teams or productive teams, that kind of thing. But we also reflected that, you know, you need balance there as well, because what makes, you know, one person happy doesn't necessarily make another person happy. And, you know, the bigger and more complex you've got the team, the more range of personalities and needs and, you know, kind of ability or desire to have certain types of fun is more varied, and it makes it harder and harder the bigger the team you've got.
Yeah. Well, and it's also expertise, isn't it? I mean, there is a model. There is something called the Balanced Leadership Model, which I saw as part of my massive research for this podcast. Which, and actually, it was in the projects world. Which, so I thought I was going to ask you about this. So, and it talks in terms of horizontal leadership and vertical leadership in project teams. And the theory is that you sort of have a vertical leadership, which let's say in essence is the project manager. So it's the individual that's charged and visibly responsible for the deliverables.
Mm-hmm.
But horizontal leadership relates to the expertise required to get things done. And what a good project manager does, he sort of delegates that across to someone who leads that work stream. Because they have the expertise and they're charged with that responsibility. And so there seems to be a recognition that you need to flip between these different horizontal and vertical leaderships depending on the expertise required to complete the task.
Well, yeah, I think it's also true on the type of project to community you're leading, really, because, you know, we know that in some businesses there is a dedicated team which project manager leads at from the front room, but the majority is the project managers trying to persuade people who don't actually report to them to, you know, contribute to be part of the objectives of this particular project, but they actually work for other people and have other priorities. So, you know, that's a whole topic in itself, really.
But it's interesting that I mean, that's not limited to the project world, is it? I mean, we see it in the project world because of the way sort of responsibilities come into existence that are not particularly hierarchical, but someone's made responsible for an endeavor. And it sort of, it often just trample across the hierarchical lines, doesn't it? And it's one of the skills project managers have, isn't it, to be able to manage that sort of diversity of command and control, empathetic leadership, communication, and, you know, bringing experts in to the party. I mean, it's,
yeah, I mean, they have a skill, they have an experience to do that, and they have a form of authority to do that. Absolutely. We see the pain where you know, in the world that I describe as projects as usual, where we're asking business leaders to undertake some form of change that don't have the necessary that kind of level of authority or experience when the change they're trying to lead incorporates other parts of the business. So, you know, that kind of negotiation, navigation, communication, all of that is sometimes challenged.
Well, taking that a step further then, so do you think that sort of balanced leadership, if we could describe that as balanced leadership in terms of the responsibility shifting to the right person at the right time, do you think the corporate world's heading that way? Do you think the hierarchical constructs have got a lot softer, and that actually you see groups working where it's all about the outcome and different members of the groups lead at different times depending on their skill sets?
Well, you said, I think you have both. I mean, I think, you know, if we reflect on our own industry, you still see those kind of structural leaders in place according to the major parts of the business operations, but then across that, certainly you see a kind of a bleed across where, certain groups are trying to achieve something that require other groups to contribute to or align to. And so you've got both of that going on. It's kind of like a, I guess it's kind of like a messy matrix over the top.
And so, in that context where you've got a messy matrix and you're sort of trying to balance the leadership across stakeholders, is that perhaps a contra argument and that what's required is someone very senior saying, this is the way it's going to be? So it does away with all the nuances and it brings absolute clarity to a deliverable. It rides a coach and horses through people's sensibilities if it's not being communicated properly, but it will achieve, it is probably more likely to achieve a quicker result. So, is that an argument against balanced leadership?
Well, first of all, I'm quickly registering the trademark messy matrix because I think I've just made that up. So that's mine now. Right. Secondly, you heard it here first. I don't, it's a time and a place and a need. Sometimes, majority of times, the cooperative collective approach really works, but every now and then you need a more authoritative, decisive, this is the way we're going to go. And it's interesting, I think you often see that in organizations as they start to replace their senior leadership, that suddenly it becomes a little bit, for a period of time, it perceivably becomes more directive, I think, in their kind of leadership. They're new, they can actually make decisions and they can point in a certain direction. This is a new way to go. And then I think it begins to settle down again into the kind of softer leadership style, management style.
Well, don't you think that's a dynamic around someone taking a new position of responsibility and wanting to demonstrate progress in their first 30, 60, 90 days?
Well, you got the first 100 days or whatever, isn't it? Yes. I mean, it is, and they've been brought in for a purpose. But I think, we all deal with resistance, passive or otherwise, inside organisations. A new leader coming in can be less concerned about that because they have the support of the organisation, senior leadership, clearly. They're here to do a job. They have to demonstrate it, and they can make some rapid decisions. And then they settle down into the normality of business life and perhaps become a little bit more balanced in what they in their approach.
Yeah, so there's a rule I used to apply, which I don't think I've ever talked to you about, Peter, but you'll
Oh.
recognise it in a new role where you've probably got a couple of yeses until you get a no, because there's an element of goodwill and faith, and you've been appointed for certain reasons, and therefore there's a little bit of momentum about being in a new role, and so perhaps that's part of what we see with new leadership, that actually it all perks up a little bit because everyone's aligned for a couple of cycles, and then the reality dawns on everybody that actually this is much more complicated than I thought it was.
Well, I think from an individual's point of view, it's like this. It's resistance is futile. This is the new person coming in. They're going to shape it the way they want it, and then a realization that you know what, actually, we can sit behind this, but we can also continue to operate in our old way of working. And that's part of the challenge to the whole kind of transformational world as well, is that the majority can suddenly slow things down, not through any significant resistance, but just quietly getting on with life.
Well, and I wonder whether, going back to your world, the project world, that balanced leadership approach that I was describing, which is sort of necessary to get at that collaborative approach, is that why executive sponsorship's important? Because, ultimately there needs to be someone of enough seniority to make a decision that trumps everything else.
Oh
Because
yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of the key points of an executive sponsor is, I mean, apart from the kind of experience and insight they can bring to support project managers, the project manager is only going to have a reach up to the organization to a certain level, typically to their executive sponsor. I mean, the sponsor will have the ability to navigate, negotiate at a much higher level. We'll also have probably an insight into the landscape of what the business is trying to achieve and other commitments and other priorities, and bring that back down into the project. So yeah, you definitely, the most successful are where you see that kind of very strong partnership.
so I wonder whether then balance actually, a balanced leadership approach is perhaps it's of the moment and it's seen to be a more appropriate style of leadership or more effective style of leadership compared to the historic sort of command control, sort of tend to be male oriented, style, and that diversity within teams and the balance we see within groups of people that have different preferences in terms of the way they sort of conduct themselves on those various curves that we talked about earlier is also a good thing. But actually, without that astringent quality of an executive sponsor or a decision maker that's particularly focused on driving through all of the mush when it's required, it needs both factors in a working life in order for the project or the endeavor or for the organization to be successful. Would that be fair, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, are we leaning as a, I mean, are we leaning onto the most effective leader in the long run? I know leaders can come in and be very effective for a short period of time, but is it someone who can flex that balance or
Yeah,
bring that balance?
I think so. I think we're saying that a balanced style actually requires a leader to operate across the spectrum of leadership styles according to the team and according to the moment and according to the mores of the organization, I think. Yeah, I think
Yeah.
that's true. And therefore, perhaps what was not so good about the autocratic style was not that it didn't get things done, but it actually that lack of flexibility didn't empower the groups, the organization to an extent where it probably meant that that sort of leadership style doesn't get the best out of the individuals. It might facilitate a quick result in the moment, but it's not perhaps a sustainable way of working in order to have engaged groups that are contributing to the best of their ability using their unique diverse talents. So that's probably why that leadership style has become a little bit discredited. Not the sharpness of the decision making, but the inflexibility of the style, perhaps.
Well, I also think the reality of the fact we operate in a very virtual world has contributed to that as well. So, the autocratic style, and I can go back, in my early days in software tech companies that, I worked for a managing director who was absolutely that autocratic. He'd delight in driving down from the north, coming to the office, shout at a lot of people, order things around, and demand meeting after meeting. And then head off back home again for the weekend. And that was his style. What I'd say is that worked because he could turn up in a room and shout at you face to face or whatever. But in the remote world, that's harder to do, certainly. And we know, business has become, certainly our world has become very global, extended resources connected around the world, working together, multiple cultures, all the rest of it. So I think by that very nature, it kind of created that original style of management as something that was prehistoric and big, is hopefully is becoming significantly gone.
Well, but also, don't you think that, I mean, just listening to you describe that individual, I mean, that's a shocking lack of respect, isn't it, for the people who were shouted at? I mean, irrespective of whether they're doing their jobs well or badly, to shout at employees is completely out of vogue now for all the reasons it should be out of vogue. But there's a business component here, isn't it, which is, do you remember that we used to talk about the war for talent, but actually the workforce sort of won the war of talent in the sense that there's not enough talent to go around now. And therefore, this is sort of the modern age of work where employees rightly are demanding more from their employers than the money and development. It's a whole series of things that are sort of required, really. And the different age groups have different requirements. And so I don't think an organization that had a leader that shouted at people would retain their staff. And so, retention being a problem for lots of industries, that would be the death knell of an organization that couldn't keep its talented people. So it sort of feels that's another reason why that style just won't fly anymore, because you wouldn't be able to keep good staff.
No. I mean, it'd be interesting to look at what the turnover was. I mean, I know it always depends on what the market was and the availability of other jobs, alternative jobs, or that mentality of, kind of job for life or significant periods of time, whether that had an impact or not, or whether it allowed it to be to be in existence longer. But yeah, certainly now, as you say, there the expectation, the demand effectively is, well, no, that wouldn't be tolerated, and it's not acceptable, and it's not productive.
But you stayed, Peter. Why did you stay then?
Well, because he kept promoting me, and I, it's like,
Ah,
yeah.
sticking carrot, was it?
Well, to be honest, I got to understand him, and yes, and I got on with him okay, and I was delivering the most significant project the company had ever had at that time. So, I was a significant contributor to the revenue. So maybe he was a little. I experienced the wrong end of his temper a couple of times.
This was pre-me, wasn't
It was pre you. There was a life pre you. Absolutely.
it?
It's known as BD, before Daz. And oh God, I mean, it's just, I can remember I completely screwed up a delivery of a software to a client. And I think it was about 45 minutes of ranting I experienced as a result of that. I made a mistake, but I think it was a bit extreme.
It's so interesting, isn't it? That's much less common now, isn't it, than it used to be
Oh,
10
yeah,
years ago?
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But the other thing about it, I would say, it significantly fed the style of his sub managers in many ways as well. I was, more than one person standing in an office shouting at people across the office because they'd screwed up. You just wouldn't get away with it now.
It's an interesting angle to balance, isn't it? That you do see that in organizations where people can have a tendency to recruit people like themselves.
Yeah.
The logic goes, I'm successful and therefore I'm going to recruit you because you look like me and you're going to be successful. But of course, that's a very short-sighted view, and we've talked before about the need to recruit teams that don't look like you, so that you've got different perspectives on a common problem. So perhaps another definition of balance there, that actually it requires different personality types to be incorporated into the whole in order for the whole to be more successful.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. I'm just for the record, Daz has never shouted at me. You do, however, have a kind of sigh, which I always consider is a bit like Paddington stare. It sends a message.
What the sigh does.
Yeah, the sigh does. Yeah.
What, like your whistling sends a message.
Well, like I'm bored. I haven't whistled on a single podcast yet, so I'm never bored. I'm never bored.
That's true. So there you have it, Peter Balance.
Okay.
I was interested to talk to you about it in leadership and in life,
Okay.
and
Very
I've
nice.
given it a bit of an airing, and I think I summarized previously, well, I think it's a good thing, but without that sort of more astringent directive decision making when required, it can be a bit of a problem because you actually do need to move on and make decisions sometimes.
Well, okay, absolutely. Don't I tell you where I went straight away when you said balance? I immediately went to tightrope walking.
Yeah.
So I can contribute a very well, it's a bit like QI now, really. It's an interesting fact, quite interesting, that the world record for tightrope walking was a French tightrope walker who did 2,200 meters, that's 1.4 miles, off Mont Saint-Michel in 2022. That's what I've got anyway.
Well, thank you for that contribution, Peter, to our leadership podcast.
That's great. Yeah. Well, I let variety, you said. Variety.
Got to be relevant variety, though, Peter. It's not the slight
Well,
variety's sake.
identity, they're relevant, absolutely.
All right. No, leadership is like a tightrope sometimes. I see that. Yeah,
Yeah, with a big balance pole.
I see that. All right, Peter. Well, there we go. That's number one in the can, provided it's recorded.
Oh, ouch. Ooh, this ain't so mean. It's definitely saying record at the moment. And if I manage not to delete the recording, then we'd be good. But thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Good. And I look forward to the next one, which I will also
Yes.
plan.
Yeah. No, sir. Yeah. I'll continue in my subservient role.
Thank you, Peter.
All right. Bye, Daz.
Bye.
You've been listening to an unusual podcast from David Ayling Smith and Peter Taylor. More information can be found at www.squidofdespair.com.